Welcome to the Recruitment Flex with Serge and Shelly. I'm Serge.
And I'm Shelly. And we talk all things recruitment starting right now.
Bonjour and welcome to the Recruitment Flex. Shelly, we have another exciting guest, one that they lovingly call the fish dog. So we got to introduce this and find that story out.
We better quickly explain that for sure. I am so pleased to have joining us someone who's well-known, renowned, in fact, I would say, in the TA community. We have Craig Fisher, who is the author of the book Hiring Humans and also CEO at TalentNet Media. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Thanks, Shelly, Serge. Great to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
So, Craig, let's start with you. Something our endlessly curious audience wants to know. Who is Craig? And talk a little bit about your journey in talent acquisition or the HR world. Mm-hmm. Give us the story.
Yeah, I started my career as a drug rep after college at University of Oklahoma. I got hired by Glaxo to sell pharmaceuticals. And I did that for a couple of years. Then I got a bigger job selling hospital equipment. I did that for a few years and I loved it. And I became team leaders at both places and got to hire and recruit people to my teams and to the organizations. And I liked that part of it as mm-hmm. well. And then at some point in the mid 90s, a bunch of my mates from that business jumped over to recruiting physicians. And that was a hot thing at the time. So I got recruited into that. I got recruited into recruiting and promised more money, less travel, all that great stuff. And once you get into recruiting, you never get out. That kind of quickly moved to, you know, the mid to late 90s tech boom. And so we all became tech recruiters and off to the races. I did all sides of big staffing, right? I worked for Matrix Resources. I did sales and recruiting and leadership. Eventually, I was an owner of my own staffing company in the mid to late 2000s. And the whole time I was doing this, I was bringing my sort of advertising and marketing schooling to the picture and saying these employers could do a better job of advertising who they are and what they do and why it's a good place to work. And it would make my job easier. So I would offer that basically for free to the employers. I'm like, hey, I've got some ideas for you. Might want to try this. A little search engine optimization on these job descriptions might be a good idea too. Anyway, that became a thought leadership business. Companies started asking me to come speak to their teams about social media marketing and things like that for recruitment. And in 2011, I officially launched my employer branding business, although I'd been getting paid for it since 2009. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, we started the TalentNet Twitter chat. So it was hashtag TNL to start with, hashtag TalentNet Live. And it was a weekly chat that kind of jumped over from recruitingblogs.com. That's what it was at the time. Everybody was on Twitter and no one was going to these chat rooms. So we just started a Twitter chat there and people from all over the world joined it. And very quickly, that led to people asking for an IRL meetup. And if you remember the IRL days. And so in the fall of 2009, we hosted our first TalentNet Live conference. People were complaining that the economy's bad. They don't have budget to go to a SHRM or an ERE or HR tech conference. Uh-huh. And so we just put on an inexpensive get together. We had Bill Borman come over and he was our first keynote speaker from London. And that was exciting. He was my Twitter buddy. And we didn't know what we were getting into. PepsiCo Frito-Lay hosted us. Monster was our first sponsor. And 200 plus people showed up and we're like, wow, there's an appetite for this. And so we kept doing it. And we've done it twice a year ever since, once in Dallas in the fall and Austin in the spring. And so that's a lot of fun. And it's become my user conference. My business has really evolved. I used to do pretty pictures and pretty words, I say. And now I want to prove that it does something. And so for several years now, I insist on being able to prove ROI and conversion rates.
Yeah.
If you're going to do top of funnel marketing, let's be able to prove that you can track it all the way through. And so I insist on an intro to the HRIS team and sit in on vendor calls and interview recruiters and hiring managers. And the reason is very often conversions aren't because of the marketing, right? Conversion problems are from fallout when people hit your login screen to apply for a job, or you're asking too many assessment questions, or there's lots of reasons. Your jobs aren't coming out of the applicant tracking system well. They look 3 years old because you're using an old template. So they're not showing up in search results, right? I think every job starts in a search bar somewhere. And so I'm all about SEO. My practice is almost more about talent operations and candidate experience than anything else. We still do the attraction marketing piece, all those fun things. You know, if you really want to fix things, connect the dots, make sure you can track end to end, all that stuff, I'm your guy. And I've got a great fractional team of people that helps me do it. It's fun.
The whole notion of employer brand in 2011, people must have looked at you like, what?
Yeah.
What? I think even as recent as 2018, 19, 2020, chief marketing officers are still going, employer brand, what do you mean? So, wow, you were like way ahead of your time. So thank you very much for carving out the path for us. So let's talk a little bit about the book you wrote, Hiring Humans. Mm-hmm. Who's it for? Why did you write it? And who should read it?
Yeah, I wrote my first article about employer branding in 2009.
Wow, right, pioneer.
Talk about nobody knew what I was talking about. But there was a global employer branding company that was just fledgling, and they had an in-person magazine that they would ship to HR offices all over the world. And so I was on the cover of that, and I wrote this big article about, you're doing it wrong, don't just rely on job boards, all this stuff. And at that time, I knew I had a book somewhere. This goes back to 09. I'm like, I've got all these thoughts in my head, I need to get them out. And people ask me for years, could I do a lot of training for recruiting teams and sales team?
Yeah.
And if we could just get this in a book, that'd be great. I write a lot of articles and I do a lot of broadcasts. But I struggled to really pin down what needed to be in this book because I wanted everything to be in the book. And that's too much. So I narrowed it down to what you need to do in attraction marketing to get people across the finish line. So not just attracted, but hired and retained. And so it goes through the steps, step one, two, three. And each step is a chapter with a case study from a company that I've actually done the work with. And these are all, you know, Fortune 100 organizations, like big companies. And so it's not just theory, it's practice, and it's a whole lot of outside the box thinking. So the book's really as much about thinking about things differently than what we've been spoon-fed for years as it is about practical tips. So at the end of each chapter, there is key takeaways. You could just read those and have a good guide to how to do this right. The book is really for anyone in HR, talent attraction, CEOs, CFOs, COOs, right? Yeah. Your business should be about growing with empathy and kindness. And the theme of this book is job candidates are our potential teammates.
Yeah.
Why should we treat them as numbers or anything less than people who very well are our on-deck circle? They're going to be working with us at some point soon. So they're all worthy of our respect and attention. And if we treat everyone with that mindset, then we get in the right frame to do a good job of candidate experience.
So there's a couple of things that really stood out for me in the book. Chapter four, you talk about employee value proposition, and that is a really challenging one for a lot of companies. And usually what they'll do, and this might be true, might be not, they're going to a consulting firm that creates a message for them that is extremely generic and sounds like every other message out there. And I would say a lot of it is what I call aspirational, aka lying. It's just what they want to be, but it's not the true behaviors within the organization. Like, how do we get away from this? Because I think I would say 6-7 years ago, this was the message. We need to be better marketers. And we just went way too far in that sense of actually distorting reality. Mm-hmm. How do we fix this to create authentic, real messages that in one way would entice people to come, but also for the wrong candidate, decide not to apply, which is good as mm-hmm. well?
Yes, you made a really good point there, Serge, about helping the wrong candidates to opt out.
Yeah.
I think what happens too often is marketing firms are slick. That's what they do, right? They're consultants. They make things look appealing. And they go through the motions of doing an employee survey or something like that. And then they take the best of things and then they write something that's going to look good on a case study. That's what we're stuck with, but there's a better way. And so in interviewing your workforce, in order to get to the crux of what's really interesting and authentic about your organization, you need to interview people from all aspects of work in your organization, right? The people who work in the cafeteria, people in accounting, not just frontline workers, everyone. And you want to interview cheerleaders as well as detractors.
Yeah.
Not everybody is going to be fired up every day about their job after 15 years. There's going to be some people that have some dissent, and that's a good thing. You want to hear from those people. This company was great when we did this. Now we're doing that, and it's not as great. But that doesn't mean that they weren't a good culture fit to start with. They are still a great part of your organization. And then you want to interview managers and leaders. And you do this all individually, one-on-one, and then you put them in a room together and let them talk and give them interesting ideas about what to talk about. And when they do that, and you just say, this is a safe space, we're going to have a bitch session and let them have it out. They'll get around to what's great. Absolutely. But then you also know what's authentically a struggle. And yeah. you want all of that to be part of your organization. We are this. We aspire to be better at that. Glassdoor and Indeed reviews, places that people walk out the door and roast your company. You want to acknowledge, hey, we're working on this. We hear from our employees that we need to do better at this, and we're doing it. And so you can get to an authentic place, a transparent place that still appeals to the right people. And then use skills-based hiring to try to make sure that they are. But we can talk about skills-based hiring in a minute because I've got some ideas about that.
Yeah, we definitely will. So I agree. True behaviors within an organization highlight the good, but also highlight what you can fix. I do want to jump into another part. I think this is in chapter 5, where you talk about content generation for recruiters. Mm-hmm. And a lot of recruiters I talk to, this is where they struggle because the only content they share is job postings. And right. that gets pretty lame pretty quickly. So I loved your concept. It reminds me of the Gary Vaynerchuk concept of give, 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 and then eventually ask. Mm-hmm. But what is, in your words, what is the 5-to-1 content generation plan? How do you use it? How should recruiters leverage something like that?
Yeah, Gary's concept and my concept are all the 80-20 principle.
Yeah.
Right. And the 80-20 principle works in all kinds of equations for relationships. If you give 80% of the time and ask 20% of the time, then you're going to be better off. And the reality is, we generally ask first online because we're spoon-fed content. So, hey, check out this article about our CEO on the cover of Forbes, or refer someone to this great job. Those are all asks,
yeah.
right? If you're going to give first and build trust in your network on a regular basis to where then they are cool with the occasional ask, you want to provide things that are helpful, humorous, entertaining on a regular basis, and even slightly personal. So I feel that everyone should have 3 things about themselves that they feel okay with sharing with the rest of the world that are not business related. And so for me, for years, I've got 3 boys. So I shared stories and pictures of my kids on social media. And we had a boat on Grapevine Lake, and I'm into photography and travel. And so like all these things come together to be my three things. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly just building relationships and entertaining, which is the main thing recruiters should be doing, right? You want to keep your network warm and trusted. And that's how I started out in the 90s. So we had these chat rooms, remember, like AOL chat rooms and places where tech people would go.
Messenger.
Lurk. That's right. Mm-hmm. And recruiters would get booted out all the time for just going in there and posting jobs and recruiting. You get booted out. And so I actually taught myself to code during this time. I downloaded Dreamweaver and all those fun tools, and I started building websites and hacking my way into learning about the skills that I was recruiting for. And so I would go into these chat rooms and post legitimate questions as a user, right? And contribute and say, hey, I've created this wild hack. Has anyone done something like this? I'm a passable hacker. And I built rapport with these folks. And every once in a while, I'd say, oh, by the way, this company's hiring. If you're interested or know somebody, let me know. But never post the job and, you know, follow all the rules. But it became easy to remember as 80-20 or 5-1. It's all very similar formula, and you just want a cadence. And the reason for the cadence is it's consistency over time. Mm-hmm. And what people tend to do is they've got an initiative, they've got a hiring event or whatever, they'll post, and then they disappear for weeks. Or they get a new job and they stop posting for various reasons. And you can't do that. A week should never go by that you don't post something. And so if you're following your formula, it's easier to remember, hey, I'm off track here. Let's get back to center.
Such good advice. I had an aha moment listening to you and realizing what so many recruiters fail to do. They talk about building their personal brand, but it's always the we're hiring or great opportunity. And I just cringe, but what a great formula to have. And I love the idea of sharing, like, that's the recipe. Share something personal, share a cartoon you think is funny, but don't always be asking. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Yes.
I had a real aha moment there. So you brought it up. Let's go there. When we looked at the top four things in TA for 2024, skill-based hiring is right up there. Do you see it as a disruptor in the way we hire? Share with us your thoughts about this trend for skill-based hiring.
Before you do, can you define what skill-based hiring means to you? Because we've heard different definitions from different folks.
Yeah. What I hear the most is skills-based hiring is based on things you've actually done and not things like degrees and certifications. So you actually have experience doing X. Now, there's a flip side to that that I think gets overlooked. And I've done some live streams with Plum recently, and they're good at talking about this. Jason Putnam does a real good job of talking about soft skills-based hiring. The point of that is you do a psychometric assessment about a person's enthusiasm for the work that they would do at your organization. And a person who gets up every day and is excited about their job, who has 5 years of experience in a certain skill, is going to be a better hire than someone who's just doing it to get their next job that has 10 years experience with a certain skill. And so soft skills-based hiring is really important.
What's your prediction? Like, where are we going with this? Is this going to be adopted from a lot of organizations? We're trying to figure out, like, is the resume going away, or is this just a part of it?
Yeah, a few things have happened in the last few years. The push towards salary transparency.
Yeah.
You remember this? Google got sued and Amazon got sued, and women were just getting paid drastically less. And so laws and rules started coming up about you can't ask about a person's salary history. That's a no now. You're not supposed to ask that. And so if you can't ask that, then in theory, you don't have a baseline to decide where a person gets put salary-wise. And I feel like this works also well for people coming back to the workforce after having executive-level positions. They just want to do good work. But if you can't ask about their $300,000 salary, then you can't discriminate against them for a $140,000 job that they're perfectly capable of doing. Mm. All right. So then fast forward, we have the affirmative action ban, right? Which kind of takes a lot of diversity out of the equation, unfortunately, for recruitment. That also pushed away the necessity to have that college or university degree in the equation, right? If you don't have to consider that because of things like affirmative action, then you might have a even broader slate and potential for even better diverse recruiting. Now, then, unfortunately, we had a recession and TA jobs got slashed. Diversity is one of the big roles that has been decimated by this. And so, you know, what happens next? I'll be interested to see how we rebuild from that. But if you're focusing on the skills, then you're not focusing on a university background or a collegiate background or any sort of, you know, macroeconomic thing. It's just, you've done this work. You seem to be a good fit for this company. That should be the right way to hire people. Is it a trend? Yes. Is it a good trend? We'll see. We go through all these things saying this will make a company better and more productive. And then there's a study about that. And we use those numbers for years from one study. And then several studies come out and say, no, that was all trash. So we're going to do something else. And that's what will happen. We'll be on this for a couple of years. We've been talking about it now for a couple of years. It'll keep going. But the reality is technology will take us beyond that at some point soon.
Agreed.
It is interesting, Craig, because I know what you're referring to. Like as soon as you mentioned how one study will come out and say, this is all garbage and we'll never do it. We'll never get there. And when you look at who wrote those studies, could there be a bit of a self-serving interest? I've read some studies out of the UK that is saying skill-based hiring, it's impossible. We'll never get there. And it's usually coming from those very large human capital management system providers.
That's right.
That would mean they would have to rewrite their entire system in order to move in that direction. And we know that you can't move a ship that big. I think I hear what you're saying and I see it as well in the studies. And I love the tie that you made back to salary transparency and diversity, equity, and inclusion, because looking at the skills and, as you mentioned, Plum talks about what do you like doing? Imagine. Oh my God, put all those things in one blender and mix it up. It does make for a more engaged workforce for sure.
That's right. Yeah.
Also, when we're looking at some of these studies recently, even when you looked at who in 2023 and so far in 2024 have been doing really well, job boards are slowly declining. But what we're seeing is the gig workforce, like Fiverr and Upwork, their revenues are up. Give us your thoughts on the workforce composition of the future of work. Do you think that the gig economy is going to be a major factor in the future, or will it continue?
I think it already is. And I think one of the ways that we're doing more with less on paper, layoffs left and right, we're outsourcing a lot of the traditional things to gig workers. And maybe they're gig workers plus AI, right? Who cares? But the gig workers who are able to create these things quickly and build processes and fix equations and all these creative things that you're able to do as well, they're your outsourced team now. Mm-hmm. And your traditional $20,000 a month marketing firm is also doing the same thing. They're outsourcing half of things they do to Fiverr and Upwork and AI. And so it's already here. It's not going away. And if you think about what we've seen in trends in universities, the student populations are declining fairly rapidly. Part of this is due to COVID. Part of it was already happening before COVID. Mm-hmm. Some of it is a generational thing, right? Wealthier parents equal kids that don't have to have as much school and can still make a living and do well. And that's just been the way our economy has worked. A lot of these kids now are not finishing school. Some of them are not even going to school, but they're getting training to do some of this gig work stuff. And that's where a lot of this economy comes from.
I think that completely aligns with what we were talking when it comes to skills-based hiring, because they're acquiring one particular skill and bringing it to Upwork, Fiverr. Interesting perspective. I wanted to go through the whole episode without talking about AI, and I'm almost there, but I think I might have to bring it up in this case. Because one of the things that I'm dealing with, talking to a lot of practitioners and leaders, is the quality of candidates have gone down significantly over, say, the last decade. A lot of people blame it on the easy apply, which I don't think is a culprit, because you needed to figure out something for these horrendous ATS and HCM's application process. Sure. But Indeed, being the main driver of it, has really brought the Amazon approach to applying for jobs, like that one-click apply. Then if you add on to that AI assisting people to apply, we've heard of the company like Lazy Apply that you can do 750 applications in one day.
Yeah.
Then in Canada, a huge challenge that we have is we have a lot of international applicants that are not actually in the country. So you take all of those factors, less recruiters, as you mentioned, a lot of teams have laid off the recruiters, less resources, a ton more applicant, but generally not qualify. What's your take on this? Is this something that is going to be like these couple of years, then we're going to get over it? Or is this something that is going to be a challenge for talent acquisition in the future?
So it is a huge challenge. We are seeing recruiters with a lot more recs on their plate than we have in the past. When you get past 20 or 25 recs, you're not doing a good job. We've got low churn and turnover in the workforce right now. Even though the unemployment numbers come out to pretend to be great, they're not. Especially in white collar workforces, there's a lot of people unemployed, but the majority of people that those numbers come from, good numbers, are hourly workers, right? And so they're all doing great. Recruiting is not broken there. And people from other countries aren't applying to those jobs either.
Yeah.
So we have this in a, as a white collar problem. And it is a problem that a couple of knockout questions or opt-in questions, as I like to call them, could fix. If we just take the extra step with an easy apply and create a landing page or a chatbot that asks a couple of questions and then creates a candidate home in the applicant tracking system or updates a candidate home in the applicant tracking system, those bridges are now easier and easier to build. Almost every ATS has an API that you can create a webhook to. So all of these excuses for not doing it are bad excuses, but technology will save the day soon and weed out the sort of AI applicants. Within a couple of years, we'll be past this problem.
Okay. Interesting take. It's funny you say knockout or opt-in questions, because I agree with you. And we've moved away from it over the years, right? Like, this was very common practice when I started in recruitment in the early 2000s. We had multiple opt-in questions that were coming out. So Craig, I was on LinkedIn not long ago and I saw a picture of you. I saw a picture of you with Bill Borman, Matt Charney, Joel Cheeseman, and I forget who else, but it was like the motley crew of talent acquisition. It shows of how long that you've been doing this, and you're like, I don't want to call you an OG, but you're kind of an OG in this space. So that is probably why your TalentNet conference, and you held it last week. And I had a lot of FOMO because I was looking at the pictures. I'm like, this looks awesome. It's a movie theater. And you had the who's who of the industry to attend. So how did it go? What was the goal of this conference?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So one of the reasons the TalentNet conference has always been popular and good is because we've got so many leaders that are of the OG school right here in Texas.
Yeah.
And so we're in the middle of the country. It's really a regional event, but it's become such a go-to thing that we get people from all over the country and all over the world attending for different reasons. So Dallas is a drastically different thing than the Austin event. And we were actually supposed to be at Yeti's headquarters for this conference, and we outgrew the space very quickly.
Oh, wow.
And just turns out that next door to Yeti's headquarters is this cinema movie theater that they paid to put us into, which turned out to be awesome. And so it was fun. Our event is sort of intimate, right? It's not a 1,500 or 15,000 person thing. It's a couple hundred most of the time. And we create a safe space to have honest conversations. And that's what we do. So we're showing off our latest innovations and ideas. William Tincup calls it a speakers conference. He says that we all go there to show off what we're going to talk about for the next year. And basically what we've learned in the last 6 months, we're trying out our new material. And I invite my customers to come tell case studies of innovative things that we've done together. And then I invite my sort of influential friends to interview them about it or sit on a panel with them. And it's just fun because the rest of the recruiting community gets to come watch. And if they're good participants, then I ask them to speak at a future event. So the community evolves, and a lot of the leaders in our space who are also speakers got their first opportunity ever to speak at a TalentNet Live conference. And so now those leaders are sending their people saying, you have to go to this and tell me what's cool and what's new and bring it back. And in my conference, everybody is a colleague, right? So it doesn't matter if you're brand new or if you've been doing it for 20 years. If you're a vendor, if you're an analyst, if you're currently a practitioner, everybody in this space does all of those things at some point very often.
Yeah.
And so we're all colleagues. And then I make people raise their hand if they're looking for work. Because just because you're not employed right now, does that mean you're now not my colleague? No. It's right there in my book. Job seekers are our future coworkers. And so you might be sitting next to your next customer or employer or vendor. The CEO of your next coolest tool might be sitting next to you at this event. And that's sort of how we roll. We're all in it together. It's fun.
When's the next one?
So November 8th at Lennox headquarters. If you look on the cover of your air conditioner, it's going to say Lennox on it. And we're going to their headquarters in Richardson, Texas. We've got some one-off events in the meantime. May 10th, we're going to do the Talent Technology Summit, also in Dallas. And then in August, we're going to do the Talent Operations Summit. And there's going to be lots of tech and inspiration and cool things to see, but there's also going to be a lot of roundtables where we're going to sit around and talk about it. And so all of these things can be found at talentnetlive.com.
Perfect. I was going to ask that. And the book, Hiring Humans, is available everywhere. I'm assuming Amazon is your most popular destination.
It is.
I do recommend for all our listeners. It's a really quick read. I think I read it in a plane ride. So it was amazing. It's exactly right. The type of book that I like, Craig. So if anyone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah. So hiring-humans.com is a great way. There's plenty of ways at my website and talentnetlive.com to get a hold of me. I'm easy to Google. My search game is strong. You can Google Craig Fisher and recruiting or talent, and you're going to find me all over the place. I am on social channels at Fishdogs.
Okay, tell me Fishdogs. What does it mean?
Okay. So when I started my first website and blog, craigfisher.com was already taken. And this is back in the sort of mid 2000s. And at that time, it was cool to have kind of a hacker name. A buddy of mine from college, when your name's Craig Fisher, people call you Fish Everything, right?
Yeah.
Fish Sticks. And he called me Fish Dogs. And my original blog was about Craig Fisher and his dogs. I was already using my 5-to-1 ratio. And I had discovered that tech people, there was a big dog owner community within the Dallas technology sector. And so I was writing about technology and dogs and learning how to blog and all kinds of things. And so I just use that as my Twitter handle and then Instagram. And so that's
it's a very bro type of nickname. I like it. So Craig, this was a pleasure. I've been following you for a really long time. I appreciate what you do for the talent acquisition community. Shelley, we're going to have to attend one of these conferences very soon.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm in.
Let's go.
I love the whole community. It's really true to your brand, Craig, about the 5-to-1, give, 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 and creating a safe space for us to talk about those challenges that we have. Just brilliant. Just brilliant. Thank you so much for what you do for the community. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate both of you. You've been doing this podcast for a good long time now, and I'm glad to finally be here.
Yeah, it's been way too long. So for everyone listening,
coming to Texas.
Yes. Please do go get the book, Hiring Humans by Craig Fisher. Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Au revoir.
Shelley, let's face it. Texting candidates is the easiest way to hire quicker today. But your cell phone doesn't connect to your ATS. You're sharing your personal number with strangers. That's pretty scary, right, Shelley? And it's not even legally compliant.
This is where our friends at RecTex come in. They've created simple yet powerful text recruiting software that works with your ATS. Plus, it's designed by recruiters for recruiters, so you know it works. To learn more and book a demo, visit www.rectxt.com, mention the Recruitment Flex, and get 10% off annual plans.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.